There is a Sports Illustrated Kids laying around our house with a cover that pictures New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady. And the question, is Tom Brady the GOAT? Now, for those of you who don't know, GOAT is an acronym for greatest of all time. The article is filled with statistics. Tom Brady is the professional quarterback with the most ever regular season wins, the most ever playoff wins, the most ever championships, and he's in the top four for passing yards, touchdown passes, and more. Whether you are a fan of the Patriots or not, whether you are a fan of Tom Brady or not, this article makes the argument that you should at least admire his athletic prowess. And of course, this premise is built on one certain view of what makes something or someone great. But today's reading challenges that view. It asks us to see greatness through a different lens. It asks us to seek greatness by seeking to live from God's heart. So let's look together at what we heard this morning. This passage begins with Jesus talking about his upcoming death. According to Mark, this is the second time that he's tried to have this conversation with his disciples. And as we see, he isn't very successful. In fact, verse 32 reads, "But they did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask." Not only did they not get it, but they didn't feel secure enough in the relationship to ask. Or maybe they knew they were supposed to get it, so they blankly nodded and just hoped there wouldn't be a quiz later. Then as we read on, we see this affirmation that, yeah, maybe they didn't get it. It reads on saying, "Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, 'What were you arguing about on the way?' But they were silent, for on the way they had argued with one another who was the greatest." Again, it seems the disciples just didn't understand enough to know that they were getting it wrong. But they knew that they weren't getting it quite right. Now, before we're too hard on them, I always like to remind us that we have the benefit of knowing the rest of the story when we read these interactions. We also have the benefit of getting to choose whether or not to call ourselves Christians, not only after the entire story happened and was recorded, but after 2,000 years of watching people try to live this out. So before we get too critical of the disciples or too cocky about our own faithfulness, we should also remember that often, even with the benefit of hindsight, we don't really get it either. See, the reality is we live in a time and a place where Christianity has been sanitized, where most people aren't asking us to use it for much more than our own personal comfort. We live in a time and a place when Christianity has been so deeply embedded with our own national story that we don't know how to separate the two or how to distinguish the difference even when they are in deep conflict with each other. We live in a time and a place where Christianity has been used to support everything from our favorite bigotries to our lifestyle of overaccumulation. Perhaps we don't really get it either. So what happens if we pause and really listen to Jesus? What happens if we watch Jesus and then actually work to follow in his footsteps. I suspect the disciples weren't as dense as we sometimes assume they were. Rather, they might have been smart enough to know that following Jesus was hard work, that living in his ways asked them to give something up. Perhaps it wasn't so much that they didn't understand. Maybe they understood too much. Maybe they knew exactly what he would ask of them. After all, competition for power, wealth, and prestige infected all of the cultures included in the Roman Empire, as it does the cultures of our modern world today. And apparently, the disciples shared those values. Perhaps they truly understood what it was that Jesus asked. Because the way of Jesus was a way in which less led to more. Less stuff, less control, less fighting for power, less wealth, less fame, less prestige, which led to more freedom, more joy, more compassion, more equality, more love. But in the worldview in which they lived, which in some ways is starkly distinct from ours, and in other ways is really not that different. In that worldview, the idea of choosing less, of choosing servanthood, of choosing to defer the spotlight to another, of choosing to share power, of choosing to listen to the enemy, those ideas were not celebrated. Perhaps that sounds familiar. See, if we're honest, we have to admit that our world is not so different. We, too, like to claim our faith and stay comfortable. We like to claim our faith and buy a bigger home. We like to claim our faith and to say that we are followers of Jesus even when we only invoke him to serve our purposes. We like to create God in our own image with our own preferences and even our own bigotries rather than following the God who existed before we were even thought of. The priorities of this world come in conflict with the priorities of Jesus far more often than we like to admit. And the reality is that it is easier to sit in pews in a sanctuary and talk about Jesus dying for us than it is to commit to living our lives for him. Now, the reality is most of us will never come face to face with having to answer the question, would you die for your faith? Most of us will never have someone put a gun to our head and ask us to denounce our faith. Most of us will never have our faith be something that causes us to fear for our lives or our livelihood, and in many ways we are fortunate because of that. There are people of faith around the world across time and space who have known what it is to choose not only to claim their faith, but to do so when it was a risk to them. People who have lost homes and lives, been cut off from families, and lost jobs because they remained committed. But most of us will never know that. And as much as we rejoice in that reality, the reality is that we have rested comfortably because choosing faith is not a great risk. We have also convinced ourselves that our faith should be easy. So we've lost that reality that faith does ask something of us. In fact, it asks much. While my life may not be at risk because I say I am a Christian, My heart and soul are at risk each time I choose myself over the other. Each time I decide that growing my wealth is more important than my neighbor having a meal. Each time I decide that someone I find repulsive or someone I have named an enemy, that because I feel that way, God must feel the same. Whenever we make these choices, we are risking our very core. Jesus was talking about the end of his life, which was coming soon. A life that would end because too often he challenged the powers that be. He held accountable both the national and religious systems that were supporting a rich get richer while the poor get poorer society, and that were drawing lines to cut people out. And meanwhile, his friends and followers could do nothing but fight about who was the greatest. It was into this reality that Jesus drew a child. Beginning in verse 35, we hear, he sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." And if we look at the original language, we will see that the word for child has the same root as the word for servant. In other words, Jesus wasn't only drawing a sweet, gurgling baby into their midst because of its cuteness and innocence. Rather, Jesus drew in a child, a servant, one without power, one without greatness, one who was not valued highly. "You're looking for greatness in all the wrong places," he said. "Greatness doesn't come when you are served, but it comes when you serve and when you care. It comes when you place yourself in a lower position in order that someone who has been held there can be set free. It comes when you share what you have, wealth, power, prestige, simply a cup of cold water." We can find greatness, but don't look for it as the world looks. Look to the child, to the servant, to the oppressed, to the survivor. And Jesus invites us to not only look, but to choose to go there, to choose servanthood, to choose to lift others up, even when it means sacrifice for ourselves. You can find greatness. It may be different than you expect, but you can find it. All you need to do is follow the way of Jesus. Amen.